the Grade 3 Conference, Lecture 9, the final lecture on the 9-year change. By way of illuminating two more qualities of the 9-year change that may prove to be important in your classroom, I'm going to share with you two, as they say, true-to-life stories that really happened in my third grade. The first happened in the autumn. There were two lovely girls in the class. I'll call them Laura and Sarah. And one of these girls, Laura, had long, beautiful blonde hair. That was very much the apple of her father's eye. She grew up in Nyack, a town on the Hudson River, about 45 minutes north of New York City. Nyack, whose interesting qualities put it quite at odds with the rest of Rockland County, where Green Meadow Waldorf School is located. Rockland is pretty dull, and Nyack is a very colorful, lively city. It's like a little slice of New York City brought up the Hudson. So it has culture, it has good food, but like New York City, it also has its share of problems and issues that aren't perhaps found so strongly in the rest of the sedate county. So I just say this by way of introduction when you hear more about these children. So Laura had seen around her a lot of girls who were going through, at that time, the very popular punk transformation, chopping their hair quite short, perhaps dyeing it purple or some other very dramatic color. And she kept asking her father if she could do this. One of the salient points of the 9-year change, that suddenly the world of adolescence opens up to the child's eyes and becomes interesting and appealing. Her father said flat out, no, she could not do it. So things went on. The weeks of third grade passed beautifully in the autumn. And we began to hear stories of the Hebrew scriptures, the wonderful stories of creation, the fall, Cain and Abel, and so on. And then on one beautiful day, one of the last days of autumn, we went out for lunch recess, and Green Meadow has extensive grounds. And in those days, anyway, the children were given a lot of freedom to run about, and there was quite a bit of supervision as well. So it was a very safe playing space. The bell rang. Everybody came in for their afternoon class. And as we were going down the hallway, two girls in the class came up to me breathless, looking very upset. And they explained that Laura and Sarah had gone off, and Sarah had gone to the handwork teacher and had gotten a pair of scissors from her, telling her that Mr. Schwartz needed them. And then she and her friend Laura went to a little sort of house structure that a third grade class had built some years before. And in that little house, not the one in the big woods, mind you, in that little house, Sarah had cut Laura's hair. And now the two of them were in the house, afraid to come back into the classroom. So the girl said, what are we going to do? I said, well, let's all go in the classroom. Let's sit down. So we sat. By then, the word had spread like wildfire through the classroom. And it was the quietest this class had ever been, or ever would be again. The children were just staring at me, open-mouthed. And they said, what are you going to do, Mr. Schwartz? Are they in big trouble? What's going to happen? I said, well, for now, let's just wait for them to come in. They certainly won't want to be out there all by themselves. And surely enough, the door opened and the two girls came in. First in came Laura, she whose hair was cut. She was holding her hands as best she could over her head, saying, "Oh, Mr. Schwartz, I've got a terrible headache. I've got a terrible headache. Oh, my head," so that I would not see that her hair was completely cut. And then following soon after comes her dear friend Sarah, who has a big bulge in her pocket. And you can just sort of see these scissors hanging out of it. And she's trying to conceal that. So they both sat down. Absolute quiet, the two of them looking around with tremendous guilt. And I said, let's talk about the story of Adam and Eve that we heard a couple of weeks ago. And does anyone remember? I just started to take us through a little review, a pedagogical review of the fall. And within moments, Laura began to cry and cry and say, "Mr. Schwartz, please don't tell my father. Please don't tell my father what happened." And I said, "You know, I don't think anybody will need to tell him. I think he'll see what you look like when you come home. But don't you think it would really be best, Laura, if I called your father and mother first and let them know what to expect? It's perhaps better if they hear it from me than if you come in and surprise them." So she said yes, she would do that, and she began to cry. And then I said, "Now, I think that both of you owe an apology, not only to your classmates who've been very worried about you, we didn't know where you were, and not only to me, because you really are supposed to come in when the bell rings, but also to the handwork teacher, because you told her something that was not really true. That's correct, isn't it?" "Yes, yes, it is. That's right." And I said, "Well, I think you have to return those scissors, but before you do, I want you to make a card." And so, you know, we all had this wonderful artistic activity together and so on. And thank goodness the father was okay about it. Today, probably, there'd be a lawsuit or something like that. So he was fine. And, you know, he said, "Well, I guess it's about time for that to have happened." It took her hair about 3 months to grow back and look halfway decent. She really did look kind of like a punk at first. So here is one of the lessons of the 9-year change. For the first time, the child is able to keep a secret. Maybe not for very long, but they are certainly going to be keeping secrets. There is a difference now between the outer and the inner. This breathing, this astrality coming in and out, makes them feel a differentiation between I and thou, self and world. What I say outwardly and what I may be carrying within. So this is a very important theme, and it's something to be aware of. Now you may say, "Well, my kids have already kept a secret," but you'll generally find, and it certainly happened here as well, this is still early in third grade, it didn't take long before the entire class knew the secret, but nonetheless, those girls really went to a lot of trouble, even to the degree of lying about something, so that they could act in a surreptitious way. So be ready for that. There again, it's normal, it's healthy. We want it to happen so that the children can begin to learn how to handle this differentiation between inner and outer. And we live, don't we, in a time where under the rubric of security, so much is held secretly, except when it leaks. And this is the world in which our children are living, a world with lots and lots of secrets, with secrets within secrets within secrets and conspiracies and who knows what. So this is a very important lesson for the child to learn at this age. Here's a second example. And it's interesting. It's one of the same girls involved, the girl who got her hair cut. Now we're talking about the spring. And I described to you what this lovely little town of Nyack is like, where Laura lived. So one morning she came to school and everyone's in the hallway shaking my hand, maybe saying a little bit about yesterday or last night. And as she came up to shake my hand, she looked quite pale. I said, "Are you feeling all right, Laura?" Mr. Schwartz, something really, really bad happened yesterday. Really terrible happened." Immediately, the whole class is gathered round her. "What happened? What happened?" She said, "Well, you know, my friend Mary, who was an older girl, about 3 years older than Laura, and they would often play together, and now and then Mary would come to some school event to see her friend, said, my friend Mary and I, we were bicycling, you know, at the top of the hill near my house, and we were speeding down the hill. And then all of a sudden, a car came, and it drove next to us, and then in front of us, and it turned, so it blocked our way. We had to turn on our brakes really, really quickly and stop. So we stopped, and we thought, okay, he's going to drive away now. But instead, the man got out of the car, and he opened up the back door, and he said, get in, both of you. And Mr. Schwartz, we were shaking, Mary was shaking and shaking, and she gave an incredible mimicry of somebody who's shaking so hard that they become paralyzed. And I said, Mary, drop your bike, let's go. And I kind of grabbed her, and we ran back up the hill, and there was nobody home in my house, but our neighbors were home, and we asked them to let us in. And later on, we walked down the hill together, and our bikes were still there, but the man was gone. And she said, and we ran, I said, run away, because he's going to do something terrible. He's going to do something terrible to us. So one of the boys in the class looked at me and said, how could she know, Mr. Schwartz? That was dumb. Maybe he was going to do something good. Maybe he was going to buy ice cream for you. You shouldn't have run away. That was stupid. She said, no. It was terrible. How do you know? And she said, I saw it over his head. I looked over his head, and I could see us and what he was going to do. It was terrible. I'm not going to say. It was really, really bad. So the skeptical boy looked at me. He said, is that true, Mr. Schwartz? Could she see that? And I said, yes, that is true. She could see that. And all of you might be able to see that if you were also in a situation like that. And you really have to trust that, especially when you don't have a lot of time to decide something. You really have to trust that you can see things like that. Now, this girl was to go on and have a very interesting life. She actually went on, interestingly, and became an incredible equestrian and in turn an incredible trainer of horses and also a therapist, an equestrian therapist as well. So here's this connection, this very, very fine, almost sort of equine connection to one's astral body that allowed her to see what she saw, number one, into the future. The future was streaming towards her, and she could see it as a picture. Where did she see it? She saw it above the man's head. That is to say that she, like Any child going through the 9-year change develops a level of clairvoyance. Not a high level, but sufficient clairvoyance that one can, in a way, see things that others, particularly adults, are not seeing. And once again, thank goodness that she felt able to talk to somebody about this, that she felt that in our school, a teacher could understand this and would give it a sympathetic hearing and not dismiss it or make fun of it. So that too is important. So two pillars of the 9-year change, the ability to and the wish to keep secrets, and the ability to look into the future and have somewhat clairvoyant experiences, because one's astral body is not so tightly wound up within one that you only sort of clairvoyantly perceive yourself, that is to say, think, but you are actually able to weave clairvoyantly, to travel astrally a little bit into others. So we will see again, does the Waldorf curriculum speak to this? Are the children given objective, correlative experiences as to the experiences that they are having inwardly? And we'll see from this point on then how the Waldorf curriculum speaks to, acknowledges, validates, authenticates, and so on, the whole range of experiences that go along with being age 9.